So with Parshas Yisro, we have the arrival of Moshe's father-in-law, and he has what to say from the very beginning. Moshe tells him the story, as Mefarshim point out, this was the first actual kiyum of a Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling the story to someone who'd never heard it before. He'd heard some things, he'd heard the headlines, but Moshe gave him the small print as well. And Yisro, needless to say, is quite taken and responds accordingly. Perek Yudches, Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Yisro, Baruch Hashem. Blessed is Hashem, Asher Etzileschem Miad Mitzrayim Miad Paro, who saved you from Mitzrayim, from Paro. Asher Etziles Ha'am Mitachas Yad Mitzrayim, who saved the nation from Mitzrayim. It's a good response. Yisro responds, Baruch Hashem. Wasn't even Jewish. There you go. Nowadays, if you don't say it, people think you're not Jewish. But this is Yisro's Baruch Hashem. And interestingly, there is a comment of Chazal. It's quite surprising, but it features in two places. It's in the Gemara, in Maseches Sanhedrin, in Perek Chelek, and it's also in the Mechilta on our Pasuk. And the Gemara says, again, very surprising, Genai hu lemoshe v'shishim ribo. Genai, it reflects somehow negatively on Moshe and on Shishim Ribo, the 60 myriads. B'nai Yisrael, what's the Genai? Shelo amu baruch. That they never said Baruch Hashem. Until Yisro came. Ad sheba Yisro ba'omer Baruch Hashem. Now before we get to try and understand what exactly Chazal mean, I believe it's important to pause for a moment and observe this statement before we even analyze it. By observe, I mean, the statement is important because we perhaps may have a rather superficial or preconceived notion as to the type of thing that Chazal will say. Chazal will praise certain people, criticize others, compliment some, indict others. And who gets complimented? And who gets criticized? We might be inclined to think that the matter is a foregone conclusion. As if to say, you can divide the personalities in the Chumash into roughly three groups. There are the heroes, the tzaddikim, and then you have the villains with the rishayim, and in between you have the balabatim, the oilam, the general populace. And what type of person will attract what type of comment? Well, makes perfect sense. We could do it ourselves. The tzaddikim will get everything right, the rishayim will get everything wrong, and the beinonim, in the best case scenario, they'll stay out of the way and not cause any trouble. And along comes the Mechilta and says, when Chazal praise or criticize, it's because that is what the pasuk is saying in their understanding. Whoever it is, imagine, it doesn't get greater than Moshe, and it doesn't get greater than Moshe. Yisro, a relative newcomer. And the Gemara says, yes. And Yisro got it right, and Moshe and Bnei Yisrael somehow didn't. And you have to note it, and you have to learn from it. So that itself is important. We don't have agendas in terms of building up certain people, putting down others, and ignoring those in between. You have to learn the psukim. That's what we learn from the statement of Chazal. But what does it mean? After all, we cannot fail to have noticed last week that Bnei Yisrael responded to Kriyas Yamsuf with basically the song to end all songs. That's the song that starts all songs, but it also ends them all. And it's the ultimate. It's basically Baruch Hashem to the 12th power. So it's very interesting to look at Moshe and Bnei Yisrael as if You know, they didn't say anything. Yisro was the first person to respond. They didn't respond. Az Yashir. We mentioned before the stock response, which is a good thing to say. Someone asks how you are, is Baruch Hashem. Try it once. Someone asks how you are, bring along your siddur, open up to the end of Psukei Dezimra, and start with Az Yashir. They'll never recover. They'll also never ask you how you are again. If they have other appointments that morning, they don't know what's coming next. You've got the whole Sefer Tehillim available. And what then is the point here? What was missing? Very delicate question. And this issue is discussed by Rabbi Yosef Salant in his classic Sefer Be'er Yosef. And Be'er Yosef says, when we think about all of Yetzias Mitzrayim really, and certainly Kriyas Yamsuf as well, it comprises of two parts, because there's two parts in the equation. You had Mitzrayim, who were the persecutors, and you had Am Yisrael, who were the victims. And the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim involved retribution for Mitzrayim and salvation for Bnei Yisrael. Those are the two parts of the equation. And they're intimately bound up, of course, with each other. Says Ber Yosef, look at the Shira Sayam. And you will note that the focus of the Shira is the downfall of Mitzrayim. Blow by blow, within all its detail. Who was like lead and who was like straw and what did they say and what happened to them. But it's very interesting that we don't have that focus on the salvation of Bnei Yisrael. Now, says Ber Yosef, on the one hand, one can well understand why this was so. After all, firstly, we should remember Bnei Yisrael entered almost a kind of like a nevuah state. Az Yashir Moshe, Bnei Yisrael, they received the Shira Beruach HaKodesh. There is room to understand that they were so overwhelmed, they were so swept away, they were so elevated by the whole experience that they almost lost sense of self, one could say. To the extent that the focus was on describing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to Mitzrayim. They didn't even see themselves as part of the equation. Well, that may well be, says Ber Yosef. But at the end of the day, they forgot to say thank you. And what is the moral of the story here? The moral of the story is not to feel bad, not for Moshe and not to Bnei Yisrael. But the moral of the story is that if they were criticized for being so swept away when they were entitled to be because they forgot to say thank you, no one will ever have a better excuse for forgetting to say thank you than they did. And the point is, it's never a good enough excuse. There's never reason not to say with everything else that one says. That's a good limit. Sometimes we say all sorts of other things instead. But part of what we're doing is avoiding saying thank you. It reaches a point, the wonderful volume which describes Rav Mendel Kaplan, Zatzal, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Chonon Wasserman in Branovich, and then he found his way in Chicago, teaching there in the high school. He was the rabbi of Rabbi Wein and many others, and built them up. And he had a very interesting piece of advice for them. And this does not mean to cast aspersions on anyone who does this. But there is a minhag, or a nohag, that when someone does you a favor, there's a classic response, tiskele mitzvahs. It doesn't get better. It doesn't get holier. And Remendo Kaplan advised his talmidim not to say tiskele mitzvahs. Or more correctly, not only to say tiskele mitzvahs. Because he said, in your truthfulness concerning yourselves, you need to consider that perhaps you're saying tiskele mitzvahs because you're looking for a way not to say thank you. There's no substitute for thank you. Thank you is you recognize that kindness was done. Tiskele mitzvahs has you as the giver. You're the benefactor, as if to say, my only response is to give you something. That's a good thing to do. But not as a substitute for acknowledging that you received something. To be sure, there are worse things that you can say to a person than tiskele mitzvahs. And moreover, there is no problem in saying it in addition to thank you, but not as a replacement for. And that really is an echo Don't say as yashir, and don't say tizkur lemitzvos, or if you say them, remember to say thank you as well. It's interesting, as a PS, as Meforshim point out, the Haftorah for Beshalach is Shiras Devorah. I mean, it competes with the Parsha to the length of Psukim. And if you look at Shiras Devorah, you will see that it contains the phrase Baruch Hu Hashem twice. And that's a Meforshim, is to be sure to have learnt the lesson, as if to say there's a Shira, and it's elevating, and it's inspiring, but it's not at the expense of Baruch Hashem. So she said it twice. Tashlumin, perhaps. So these are the comments of Be'er Yosef on that very interesting and important statement of the Michilta. Now, I'd like to move from the beginning of the Parsha, of course, to Matan Torah itself. And there is a very wonderful section of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. And this is in the beginning of Perek Yud-Tes. That's when Am Yisrael reach Midbar Sinai. Perek Yud-Tes, Pasuk Aleph, Bachodesh HaShlishi, Letzeis Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Bayom HaZeh Bo'u Midbar Sinai. This is it, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, there at Har Sinai. And the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says that in this, shall we say, historical introduction to Matan Torah, there is an educational introduction to learning Torah. When we see how Bnei Yisrael prepared themselves to receive Torah, these are things that everyone needs in their own private lives as they prepare to receive Torah, to learn Torah. The first point comes, first of 3 points, comes in Pasuk Beis. Perek Yutes, Pasuk Beis. In fact, ultimately, all of these 3 points will come from Pasuk Beis. And it begins, Vayisu Merfidim. They traveled from Refidim. Now, although on a pshat level, Refidim needs no explanation, Refidim is a place. And it happens to be the place that they were at, where they most recently were. So Vayisu Merfidim, Bipshuto, is geography. And yet, Chazal Darshan, there is a medrash about Refidim. It darshans the name Refidim. Refidim is Rifyon Yadayim. Rifyon Yadayim means learning Torah with weak hands. And with weak hands means with less than sufficient effort and application. In a more relaxed way, which doesn't really involve much investment at all. If we should wonder, by the way, what did Chazal see within the words Refidim to darshan it, if it's very simply a place, the answer is that by this stage, it was no longer called Refidim. It had been renamed. They came to Refidim, but then they complained with the water. This was the first episode of the hitting of the rock. And in this instance, it was actually a good thing. And as a result of that episode, they renamed a place, Masa Umarifa, which now comes Marifa. Arif Bnei Yisrael, Val Nasosa Mes Hashem, which means, from this point onwards, it is seemingly not correct to refer to it as Refidim. It's no longer Refidim. If a person calls it Refidim, they haven't been updated. But the Torah does call it Refidim. It pulls it back to its earlier name. Why? That says Darshani. And that's why Chazal say, because Refidim has a message. And the message is Rifyon Yadayim. And the moral of the story here, the point of this idea, is that Torah gains are made through investment, through investing effort. And it's important to note this, because we're being told that this was so from the very beginning. As if to say, there is perhaps a misconception that we may have, that if learning Torah involves effort on our part, perhaps we're not doing it right. And so, well, why should it be so difficult? If we would only buy some application or buy some device, then learning Torah would become easy, and then we'd be more successful at it. And that, of course, is a product of our pairing and identifying success with ease, which in many respects is true. One is more successful in many areas of life if one does not encounter difficulty. but it is built into a meaningful Torah gain that it does involve effort. And it's very illustrative in this respect to mention a comment of the Medrash Tanhuma with regards to Moshe. And it doesn't get greater than Moshe, and certainly not in Torah. Torah Tzivil Anu Moshe. And the Torah is called Torah's Moshe. And the Medrash Tanhuma wants to know, why is the Torah called? Why was Moshe Zocher that the Torah is called Torah's Moshe? It's quite a title. And we perhaps might think, because he's Moshe, and he's on such an elevated plane, and he brought the Torah down. That's all true. But the Medrash Tanhuma says, because Moshe expended more effort than anyone else in understanding Torah. That's why he was Zocher, that the Torah is called Torah's Moshe. In what way did he expend effort? Says the Medrash, consider. He was up in Shemayim for 40 days and didn't eat and didn't drink. Because he's learning. That's not easy. And that, I think, is also a chiddush. Because I think we may be inclined to understand that when Moshe entered that heavenly realm, he assumed all those heavenly properties, and he doesn't eat, he doesn't miss it. He doesn't need to. He doesn't need to drink. He's just entered a different zone, a different realm. And the Medrash Tanhuma says it was hard for him. And he put himself out for it. He was Moshe Nefesh for Torah. And that's why it's called Torah's Moshe. And that is a big chiddush. Because we may be inclined to think that if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, that means you don't need to try. That's part of being Moshe Rabbeinu. It just comes. And along comes the Medrash and says, Moshe tried harder than anyone else, and that's why he's Moshe Rabbeinu. It's very interesting in this regard. There is a description of the Vilna Gaon by his sons in the introduction to his Biur on the Shulchan Aruch. So his sons wrote the introduction. I believe they also published the Biur itself, his Perush on Shulchan Aruch. And they describe how the Vilna Gaon learned. And perhaps closer to our experience, although yet light years away, the Vilna Gaon is another person where we would think that if you have the Vilna Gaon, it just happens. It just works. And you just understand it all because you're the Vilna Gaon. That comes with being the Gaon. And to hear how the sons describe the effort he expended in learning Torah. He barely slept. He slept 2 hours out of every 24. And they describe when, if he would reach a section, either of Nigla or Nistar, some area of Torah where he encountered a difficulty, says the Gaon sons, life in the house practically came to a standstill. There was like this pall that descended upon the house. And he wouldn't eat, and he wouldn't drink, and he wouldn't sleep. He barely slept anyway. He barely ate anyway. But nothing. Nothing happened until he... This could go on for hours. And sometimes even a day. And it's just the Vilna Gaon struggling to work it out. And then they describe, finally, of course, he'd get it in the end. He's the Vilna Gaon. He'd get it in the end. And it's almost like the lights would come out. And someone would bring him something to eat. And then he'd have a bit of a rest. And I think it's probably one of the most important things to know about the Vilna Gaon. Because the worst mistake we could make is thinking, well, he's the Gaon, so that's like, of course, he had his kochos. But he tried harder than anyone else. Being the Vilna Gaon doesn't mean not to try. And that really is the message that's embedded in the bracha that we make before we learn. La'asok b'divrei Torah. La'asok is to be involved and to expend effort. That's a good orientation towards the learning day. So whereas with many other areas of life, and rightly so, if you're trying that hard, maybe you're missing a piece, or it's not plugged in, or whatever it might be. But when it comes to Torah, if you're not trying hard, there's something wrong. That's the first lesson by Yisu Merefidim, to travel. And it's very interesting that it's an expression of traveling. You literally need to journey away from that mindset. You need to enter a new mindset where effort equals success. It doesn't. It's not a symptom of lack of success. That's point number one. Point number two, says the Or HaChaim, introduction. How does the person ready themselves to learn Torah? What do they need? Vayavo'u Midbar Sinai. The Torah is given in a midbar. In a wilderness. And what is the hallmark of a wilderness? As Chazal themselves say, it's hefker. No one owns anything in the wilderness. Which means that a person needs also to be hefker in order to succeed in learning. But what does hefker mean? What doesn't he own? What he doesn't own are his ideas and a claim to the truth. As if to say, a person needs to be prepared to realize if they've misunderstood something, and once that happens, to back down. And not to cling to their idea just because it's theirs. There's some people, as we know, to get them to part with an idea, even if it's a mistake, it's like getting them to part with a treasured family heirloom. I mean, it's been in the family for so long. It's been in this person's mind for so many minutes. How can he part from it? But that means that a person is never really focused on the truth, only on defending their ideas. There's a interesting maisa which happened, a Talmud of Reb Chaim Mibriska. I think it was actually Reb Issa Zalman Meltzer, and he was appointed as a Rosh Hashiva. And he wasn't sure if he's qualified to be a Rosh Hashiva. I mean, there aren't formal exams that a person passes to become a Rosh Hashiva. And they asked him to be the Rosh Hashiva, and he didn't know if he was really up for the job or right for the job. So he asked the Rebbe. So he came to Reb Chaim, and he said, "How does a person know if they're qualified?" So Reb Chaim said, "You know enough Torah to be a Rosh Hashiva, but there's just one thing that you also need, and that is, if you make a mistake, are you prepared to back down? Or if you don't know something, are you prepared to say you don't know? If you have those two things, then you're qualified. If not, you can never, they can't put you in front of a yeshiva, you just cause damage." And that is the concept of Midbar. And of course, much to learn. Again, we have a great Mereshit from a Gedolei Hadoros with regards to these matters. And Reb Chaim himself was an example of this. When he actually gave the shiur, when he was invited to become a Rosh Hashiva in Volozhin, and he gave his tryout shiur, and all the greats are there, and the Netziv is there, and anyone who's anyone is there. And he's giving his shiur, and someone asked a shaila. And Reb Chaim thought about it, and he said, "I don't know. It's a good question, I don't have an answer." And he later told one of his Talmidim that there was no question that he would have been capable of furnishing an answer that no one would have been able to find fault in. He's Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. He knew all styles of learning. He says, "No one could have faulted me on my answer. But I knew that the answer that I would have given them was not correct. Better to say I don't know." What he didn't know at the time is that was actually the moment that the Netziv decided that he should become the Rosh Hashiva. So that's, he learned through his own experience. He knows his greatness in Torah. If he's prepared to say he doesn't know, then all of his qualifications are in place. Needless to say, it's not enough only to be able to say I don't know. but you have all Torah and that, then you're ready. That's called Midbar. And finally, at the well-known drasha at the end of Pasuk Beis, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ha'har. Vayichan, Yisrael encamped, and it's written in the singular, as Chazal say, Ki Ish Echad V'Lev Echad. And once again, actually a very similar idea to the second, says the Rachaim HaKadosh. That is a question of unity. That's a question of togetherness. And the idea is here that you need to be aware that you can learn from other people. It's not just a question of defending your ideas. Sometimes someone else sees something that you don't see. But if there's a split between them and you, or you don't talk to them, or you don't rate them, or you don't consider them to be of any worth, you'll miss out on the truth that they could have given you. And therefore, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, all of Yisrael are together, the person is stuck, he asks the person next to him, and together they work it out. So it's a very wonderful section of the Rachaim HaKadosh, because he takes, again, these psukim, which we see, we're just getting ready for Aseres HaDibros, so the perek is building up, which it is. But he lifts it out of history and puts it into every day. I mean, these are tools, and they're prerequisites, moreover, for success in Talmud Torah. So that's the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Now, when we come to the Aseres HaDibros themselves, which of course are the centerpiece of Parshas Yisro, I'd like to preface by mentioning a well-known statement of Chazal, or certainly part of it, and just to see how it goes. It's from the end of Maseches Makos, Daf Kaf Gimel Amud Beis, and it is a drosha of Rav Samloi, one of the rabbis of the Talmud. And Rav Samloi says as follows, and this one statement spawned a literature. His statement is, Sheish meos v'shloshes rei mitzvos nitzdavu Yisrael. The Jewish people at Har Sinai were commanded with 613 mitzvos. This is the source for Taryag. This is the source for the notion that there are 613 mitzvos. It is not mentioned anywhere else. It's Rav Samloi. And from here comes the whole sifrut of Taryag mitzvos. Rambam has the Sefer mitzvos, the Bahag, the Sefer mitzvos Katan, Sefer mitzvos Gadol. There's half a dozen, if not more, works devoted to discussions of Taryag. It comes from Rav Samloi. But what is the source? It's a drasha. Because the pasuk says Torah tzivalanu Moshe. So if you look at the gematria of Torah, so you'll see that we received 613 mitzvahs. Well, the Gemara does look at the word Torah, and Torah is not 613. The gematria of Torah is 611. Taf, Reish, 600, Vav and Hey, 11. It's two missing. Says Rav Samloi, look again at the pasuk. Torah tzivulanu Moshe, there were 611 mitzvahs that we received from Moshe, because numbers 1 and 2 of 613, we did not receive from Moshe, we received them directly from Hashem. Anochi and the Yilacha mipia gevura shamanu. We received them directly from Hashem. And therefore you take the first two of the Aseret HaDibros that we received from Hashem, plus the other 611, Torah tzivulanu Moshe, gives you 613. So here is the Gemara, telling us that of the Aseret HaDibros, two of them we heard from Hashem, the other eight we heard from Moshe. And the truth of the matter is, says Ramban in his Perush on our Parsha, you can see it. You can see it in the Psukim. Because if you look carefully, you'll note that the first two Dibros are written in the first person, meaning they are written as Hashem speaking. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, lo yelecha Elohim Acharim al panai. Moshe doesn't say Hashem is Hashem Elokecha and al panav. It's Hashem talking. Whereas as soon as you get to number 3 and on, it's Hashem is referred to in the third person. Lo sisa eshem Hashem Elokecha lashav. It doesn't say lo sisa eshemi lashav. So Dibros 1 and 2 are written in the first person because Hashem is talking directly to us. From then onwards, it's Moshe talking to Bnei Yisrael. Okay, so that's a good support for Rav Samloi, mamish from paying attention to the way the psukim themselves are written and phrased. Now, there is a very interesting question that is raised in this regard. It begins with the Rambam. You know that the second dibur, because some of the dibros are much longer than others, some of them are mamish two words. Some of them are like three or four psukim. I mean, you got Kiddush in there. And the second one, it has a lot. The portrayal of the Aseret HaDibros that we have in Shul, it's actually misleading. Because whereas it's accurate for most of the ones on the left-hand side, Lo Tignov, Lo Titzach, that's it. But Lo Yihyeh is not it. That's the beginning of a very long Dibur. And in fact, there are four separate things that are prohibited in those psukim. Let us take a look at Perek Kaf, Pasuk Beis. Pardon me, Pasuk Gimel. Perek Kaf, Pasuk Gimel. Lo yielecha Elohim echarim panai. That's it. Lo yielecha means not to recognize any other form of deity. But the dibur hasn't finished. It keeps going. Number one was lo yielecha. Number two, lo sas elecha pesel kol tumenu, not to make any idol. In the next pasuk, lo sishtachavei lahem, not to bow down to them. And moreover, in the next pasuk, v'lo sa'avdein, and not to worship them in any form. In total, there are four things that this dibur prohibits. Lo yie, lo sase, lo sishtachavei, and lo sa'avdein. And the question is, how many mitzvahs are these? Sometimes you can have a mitzvah which has branches or details. You can. Is that the case here? Says Rambam, in his Sefer HaMitzvos, these four prohibitions constitute four separate mitzvahs in Taryag. Separate negative mitzvahs, lo sase, in Taryag. Numbers 1, 2, 5, and 6. So now you know. So it's very interesting because that means that when we talk about the Aseres HaDibros, we realize very quickly that it is incorrect to refer to them or to translate them as the Ten Commandments. They are not called the Aseres HaMitzvos. They're called the Aseres HaDibros. Because in fact, as far as Rambam is concerned, there are more than 10 mitzvahs of Taryag in the Aseres HaDibros. Number 2 has 4. Which means you have 13 in total. 10 Dibros, 10 statements or pronouncements, 13 mitzvahs. And that's the position, the viewpoint of Rambam. Well, are there any problems? Yes, there is. And this problem is pointed out by the Ramban. Ramban has a critical ongoing commentary on Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs. It is called the Hasagos of Ramban. And he watches Rambam very carefully. And Ramban says, I have a serious issue with this position of Rambam. Where does it come from? From Rav Samloy. Because Rav Samloy told us that we only heard 2 of the Tariq mitzvahs from Hashem, Anochi and Lo Yilacha. But according to the Rambam, Lo Yilacha contains within it 4 mitzvahs, which means together with Anochi, which is number 1, plus these 4, that's 5 mitzvahs directly from Hashem, which leaves you 608. Terach Tziva Lanu Moshe, that's what it's going to turn out with. So Rav Samloy is a refutation. If Rav Samloy says we heard 2 from Hashem, 611 from Moshe, that means in the first 2 dibros you only have 2 mitzvahs. That's a very serious sounding question. And don't tell me, says Ramban, that maybe the Rambam doesn't factor in Rav Samloy, doesn't go with Rav Samloy. The Rambam uses Rav Samloy. In fact, he uses it to establish his position regarding the first of the Aseres HaDibros. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. For let us ask a simple question. Is the first of the Aseres HaDibros a mitzvah? Says Rambam, yes. Emuna. Except it doesn't look like a mitzvah. Because there's no command. The Rambam is very particular. Nothing becomes a mitzvah unless it's phrased as a command. The Torah has to tell you to do something. The Torah is not telling you to do anything. Hashem is introducing himself. Anochi Hashem Elokecha is not telling you to do anything. So you may ask, says Rambam, and he elaborates. I mean, this is positive mitzvah number 1, for obvious reasons. He elaborates. You may wonder, why am I saying it's a mitzvah? You know why I say it's a mitzvah? Because the Gemara says it's a mitzvah. Because Rav Samloy says we heard 2 mitzvahs from Hashem. Anochi and Lo Yilacha. So now I know that Anochi is a mitzvah. And the amazing thing about this, says Rambam, is I can't explain it. And also it breaks my rules. Because I will only allow something as Taryag, or codify something as Taryag, if it's a mitzvah. And this isn't a mitzvah. So it's broken the rules. But look at Rav Samloy, it's clearly a mitzvah, which means it's an exception to the rule. Says Rambam, okay, I have no choice but to make an exception. I don't back down from the rule, but I don't refuse to allow this exception in. And that's the situation. Which means Rambam is very aware of Rav Samloy and uses Rav Samloy. He enlists Rav Samloy of 611 plus 2. Says Rambam, how can you use him there and then forget about him here? When Anochi, it's all based on Rav Samloy. Lo Yilacha, it's a complete violation of Rav Samloy. That is the question of Rambam. Okay. Well, how are we to proceed here? So the question that we need to ask by way of introduction is, what do we mean when we say that we heard the first 2 dibros from Hashem, and then the rest from Moshe? Well, Rashi seems to understand on a, so to speak, straightforward level. That means Anochi and Yilacha, literally, just to restate what we just said. Anochi and Yilacha we heard from Hashem, and the rest we heard from Moshe. However, there is another way of understanding what we heard from Hashem. And this is pointed out by the Meshech Chochmah. And this other approach is Rambam, where Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam wrote another sefer, but Mor Nevuchim, the guide to the confused. Of course, is more politely referred to the guide to the perplexed. In Mor Nevuchim, Chelek Beis, Perek Lamed Gimel, the Rambam says as follows, and we'll see how he marshals the sources, both in the Chumash and in Chazal, to establish this idea. It says Rambam, when the Gemara says, or more correctly, when we imagine what it is that Bnei Yisrael heard, we, Bnei Yisrael heard, at Har Sinai, we heard Hashem talking. But we heard Hashem talking to Moshe. As if to say, what we heard was unmistakably for us, we apprehended and experienced and encountered Hashem talking to Moshe. But he wasn't talking to us. And therefore, we heard the voice, we heard the sound, but we didn't understand the details of the content of that message. Now, why does he say that? If you have a look in Perek Yud Tes Pasuk Tes, see how the Rambam learns the pasuk. It's not so often that we get a window into the parshanut of Rambam here. Perek Yud Tes Pasuk Tes. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Hine anochi bo elecha ba'av ha'anan. I am coming to you in a thick cloud. Ba'avur yishma ha'am b'dabri imach, so that the nation, Am Yisrael, will hear when I speak to you. V'gam b'choya minu le'olam, and they will then believe in you as a result of that, permanently. So Rambam says, if you look carefully at the pasuk doesn't say, I will speak to Bnei Yisrael. It says, I will speak to you. They will hear me speak to you. Now, it's still, I think, a chiddush of Rambam, because one could have understood that they will hear me speak to you, but they'll hear what I say. But the Rambam says no. Lahavta, but sometimes you know that someone is talking to someone else, of that you're quite sure, but you're not able to access exactly what they're saying. That's what it was like. The only thing they'll know for sure is that I'm speaking to you. What it is that I'm saying to you, they won't know. You will need to then explain it to them. Which means, according to Rambam, in terms of the details of the first two Dibros, even there, Bnei Yisrael needed Moshe to break down for them and to itemize for them and explicate for them exactly what it is that Hashem had said when he was talking to Moshe. But they did hear him talking. It's a very interesting observation. Rav Kruppenmüller would make this often, that the unique level of the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu is referred to as Panim El Panim. That's in the end of the Sabracha. V'diber Hashem El Moshe Panim El Panim. Face to face. Doesn't get more direct than that. Face to face. Now, elsewhere, I think it's in Parshas Vayeshchanan or Ekev, Moshe says to Bnei Yisrael, Panim B'Panim Diber Hashem Imchem. Hashem spoke with you. Panim, Panim B'Panim. So that's very interesting. Moshe's communication is called Panim El Panim. Bnei Yisrael's experience is called Panim Bipanim. Face to face, face with face. What is the difference between those two? Except the point is, Panim El Panim is directional. The Panim is facing the other and directing itself towards. Hashem is directing himself towards Moshe, communicating with him that way. With Am Yisrael, Hashem wasn't communicating directly with them. But they were there. Panim bipanim, face with face, indicates proximity, but it doesn't indicate direction. They were there, close enough to hear, but it wasn't directed to them. That really bears out what the Rambam is saying. They were able to hear through Nevuah Moshe, that Hashem was speaking to Moshe, but not what it was that he said. And actually, says Rambam, there are so many psukim, if you just are open to this idea that they really are saying this explicitly. Matan Torah is described in a number of places in Chumash Devarim. In Parshas Vayeshchanan, in Perek Dalet, Pasuk pasuk. Yud Beis, Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayidaber Hashem Aleichem Mitoch Ha'esh. Hashem here spoke to you. Kol Devarim, Kuf Vav Lamed. Kol Devarim Atem Shumim. What are you hearing? A sound of words. What is a sound of words? To the extent that we're talking about speech, all words are sound. But the point is, says Rambam, they heard the sound of words, but not the words themselves. There was no question to them that what they were hearing was Hashem speaking. But that's what they heard, the sound. Now, if that's the case, and we're at a delicate point here, because what then do we mean when we say that we heard Anochi and Lo Yeh Elochah from Hashem? In other words, if we didn't really hear anything, words, so then how can Rav Samloi say that we heard Anochi and Lo Yeh Elochah? But the Rambam says, what it means is, being elevated to that level of Nevuah, and hearing Hashem speak to Moshe, even without hearing whatever it is that he said, was enough to instill within Bnei Yisrael the fundamental awareness that this is Hashem and there is no other power. That the profundity of the experience was enough to communicate those. You just had to hear that voice without even knowing what it was that he was saying, and to be on that level of Nevuah to comprehend, this is the ultimate source and there is no other. And therefore, the Chiddush of Rambam is that when we say Anochi and Lo Yeh Elochah, we heard from Mipia Gevura, it doesn't mean that we heard the words Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yeh Elochah. We heard a sound. But that sound was enough to communicate those two messages. Everything else is commentary. Moshe then broke it down for us into words. And interestingly, says Rambam, this is not only gleaned from the Psukim, but also from Chazal. This here, how the Rambam learns a Maimah Chazal. There is the Pasuk in Tehillim. Achas Diber Elokim, Shtayim Zushamati. Hashem says one thing, I heard two things. And Chazal say, what does that mean? It means, Achas Diber Elokim, but what two things did I hear? Number one, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and number two, Lo Yelecha Elohim Acherim Al Panai. That's the statement of Chazal. Hashem said one thing, we heard those two things. Now, we may perhaps have understood that what it means to say is that maybe Hashem kind of said these two things at once. It's one of those Zohar v'Shomor situations. Zohar v'Shomor b'dibur echad ne'emru. Anochi Hashem lokecha, anochi yelecha b'dibur echad ne'emru. So you combine them into one, but we heard two. But the Rambam says no. It means that anything that Hashem said, he just had to say something. And we already heard two messages from those words, even without even hearing the words themselves. We just had to hear the sound. He's talking to Moshe. But we can hear two things from that. We don't know what he's saying, but to be present in the proximity of that communication between Hashem and Moshe, from that we heard two things. Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yeh Elecha. Now, to see how the Rambam draws his final support that we will mention. And it comes from Unkelus. And that's very important to appreciate the regard that the Rambam had for Unkelus. It's lost on us, I think, very easily. It's because we're not native Arameans and we're not that proficient in Aramaic. And Unkelus doesn't always help us that much. I think when we're in trouble, we don't instinctively turn to Unkelus. In fact, most of our knowledge of Unkelus comes from knowing what the Pasuk says already and hoping that's what Unkelus means. But, of course, Unkelus, a Talmud of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, the Tanoim, those who know how to glean from Unkelus these ideas. Because, again, in the Aseres HaDibros, at the end of Perek Hei, to find the note here. No, it's in our parsha, Parshas Yisro, Perek Kaf, Pasuk Tet Zayin. This is Am Yisrael's response. Vayomu el Moshe. The people said to Moshe, they were absolutely petrified by the whole experience and terrified by it, and they said to Moshe, we can't take it anymore. Daber ata imanu v'nishma. You speak to us. Va'yidaber imanu elokim penamos. We can't hear Hashem speaking to us anymore. We'll die. It's too much. Now, by the way, an important parshanut point. These words are recorded in Pasuk Tet Zayin, after the entire Aseres HaDibros have gone through. But it's important to realize that according certainly to the simple understanding of the Psukim, or of the situation, these words were actually said in between Dibur 2 and 3. Because this is the transition. Dibur 1 and 2, to whatever degree, we'll get back to that in a moment. Dibur 1 and 2, they heard directly from Hashem, and that's the point where they said, we can't hear anymore. It's not that they heard all 10 and then said, we can't hear anymore. The last 8, they didn't hear from Hashem anyway. This petitioning Moshe took place in between Dibur 2 and 3. It's written at the end of the Aseres HaDibros, but it actually happened in between numbers 2 and 3. Seemingly, we have an example of the phenomenon of a muktamam ucha b'Torah, right, that the Torah doesn't always put things in chronological order. But the truth of the matter is that this is a very, I would say, mild case of a muktamam ucha b'Torah, in the sense that very often, even those who are quite makbid or machmir, I would say, very very reserved in their use of the concept of a muktamam ucha b'Torah. But if you're in the middle of a topic, you finish for sure. And then go back to say something that happened in between. The Torah itself is not going to interrupt the Aseres HaDibros between 2 and 3 and saying B'nai Yisrael. Because Aseres HaDibros, there's its own value in having them together as a unit. Later on, it will tell you then what happened. That's called, as Rav Kukman himself would call it, Torat HaHashlamah. Finish the topic. And then we can have. And that we find certainly a very straightforward example from last week's Parsha, where towards the end of the Parsha of the Man, which began to fall as soon as we left Mitzrayim, one of the final psukim says we ate man for 40 years. Now you can't eat man for 40 years in a few days. It takes 40 years. So that hadn't happened as a historical fact until the 40 years were up. But it's placed here, and rightly so. You're not going to put it right at the end. It's not going to be like the bracha achrona of the Torah. It's relevant to the Parsha of the Man. And all agree, all concur with that. That's called finishing the topic. That's called filling out the okay, so be it. In any case, B'nai Yisrael, whenever they said it, they petitioned Moshe, you speak to us, that Hashem shouldn't speak to us. And says Rambam, look what Unculus did. Well, the Rambam says, we have to look. Pasuk Tet Zayin, the Amar and Moshe, they said to Moshe, Malel Atimana, you speak to us. Unikabel, we'll hear from you. Velo Yismalel Imana min Kadam Hashem. And let not Hashem speak to us. Dilma Namos, maybe we'll die. Says Rambam, why have I brought us to Unklus? What do we see there? The Pasuk says, you speak to us, and Hashem shouldn't speak to us. It's the same verb in Hebrew. Daberata va'yidaber imano Hashem. But look at Unklus. Unklus translated the word daber ata as malel. That's a kal. That's called speaking. But when they said, but let Hashem not speak to us, it says, velo yis malel. That's a reflexive. It should have said, velo yimalel, even in Hebrew, mi yimalel. Why does it say yis malel? Says Rambam, you see, what is Unklus teaching us? Again, Unklus, Talmud of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. He's teaching us that even when Hashem was speaking to them, he wasn't speaking to them directly. It wasn't a yimalel, it was a yismalel. It's a reflexive, it's more internal. It's almost as if Hashem is speaking to himself. Moshe is there, but as far as they're concerned, he isn't speaking directly to them. That's why Moshe speaking is called malel, Hashem speaking is yismalel. So Rambam has this whole sugya covered from the psukim, from here, from Dvarim, from Mamre Chazal, from Unculus, and this is a selection of the sources of Rambam. Well then, where does this leave us? Enter the Meshech Chochmah. Meshech Chochmah says, if you want to know how the Rambam would respond to Ramban's question, which we'll review in just a second, the place to look is Rambam. As if to say, Rambam again, to synopsize and to be clear, Rambam is of the opinion that the first two Dibros contain five of the Tariag Mitzvahs. The second Dibro contains four of the Tariag Mitzvahs. Lo Yiyeh, Lo Shitachaveh, Lo Sadeim, etc. And Ramban says, how can you say that there's five of the Tariag? We heard Anochi and Lo Yiyeh directly from Hashem. And Rav Samnai told us that whatever we heard directly from Hashem accounts for only two of the Tariag, because the other 611 is Torah Tzivulon and Moshe. That means that Anochi and Yilecha, we know from Rav Samnai, contain only two mitzvahs of Tariag. How can you say they contain five? That's Ramban's question. A very serious question. Says Meshech Chochmah, that if you're Rambam, it's no kasha. Because if you saw the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, and there the Rambam says, himself explains how he understands Rav Samloi, that when it says we heard Anochi and Lo Yilecha, as we mentioned before, it doesn't mean we heard the text of the first two Dibros from Hashem. The text contains five mitzvahs, but we didn't hear the text. We didn't hear the words. We heard Kol Devarim, Hashem speaking to Moshe, from which we gleaned two of the Tariq mitzvahs, Anochi and Lo Yilecha. But we had no notion of what the content of what it is that Hashem was saying. Later on, Moshe had to explain even the first two Dibros that was being said as Anochi and Lo Yilecha, which he then told Bnei Yisrael contained four mitzvahs. So of the five mitzvahs in the first two Dibros, Bnei Yisrael themselves had worked out the first two even before Moshe spoke. And then he told them that there's actually five. But those two, and only those two, is Torah Tzivulon and Moshe. And Meshech Chochmah concludes with a very interesting statement, and that is, Ukvar Kasavti, I've already written, Ukvar Amarti, that all the works of the Rambam, the Yad HaChazakah, his Perushan Mishnayos, Mishnah Torah, Yad Achas Kasavam, it's the same hand that wrote all of them, Ruach Achas Behem, the same spirit that goes through all of them. And therefore, you see here, the Meshech Chochmah, it brings it all together. And to understand the Rambam based on Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs, based on Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim. So this is not a light discussion. May I say, as comfort, it is only a small slice of the discussion, but certainly important to ponder, and an event as Matan Torah deserves an analysis of the psukim in the way the greats have provided for us, Rambam, Ramban, as laid out by Meshech Chochmah. Well, I'd like to just conclude by coming back to where we started, but it relates to Matan Torah. Mefarshim asks, of course, the well-known question. Hashem says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. He introduces himself, so to speak, and again, parenthetically, for Rambam, it's the mitzvah of Tariyak. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I'm Hashem, you took out of Mitzrayim. And the Kuzari himself asked the question, Ibn Ezra as well, I believe, that's not the first thing that Hashem did. He created the world. So why not say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Barasi Shemayim Va'aretz? Why does he focus on Yetzias Mitzrayim as Anochi, as going with it? There is a notion which states that the basis of our keeping mitzvahs, or a basis of our keeping mitzvahs, is that of Hakaras HaTov, of appreciation, of gratitude to Hashem, with all that Hashem has done for us. And that really seems to be the dynamic here. I took you out of Mitzrayim, therefore, here are the mitzvahs. And I believe what one needs to perhaps say a bit more in this, because on a superficial level, it sounds as if Hashem is saying that, you know, after everything I did for you, so then you now have to keep the mitzvahs, because otherwise, where's your gratitude? So it sounds like this is our way of saying thank you, or this is our way of repaying Hashem. But I think that the truth is a good deal deeper than that. There are really two ways to look at mitzvahs. And certainly, lehavdol, but from the paganism to which the Jewish people had been exposed, the idea of doing, fulfilling a command of a deity, it was only otherwise because you'd be in trouble. You fear the consequences. Mitzvahs, which are commands, and they will never leave that designation, but if they're related to only as obligations, there is almost a certain distance there. Because you have no choice. The authority figure gives you an obligation, you have no choice but to fulfill it. But that is a cold relationship. And Hashem says, you need to realize, when you consider everything that I've done for you, it's not that, remember I took you out of Mitzrayim and therefore keep the mitzvahs because I did that for you, so you do this for me. But if you remember all that I did for you when you left Mitzrayim, it should give you a perspective as to why I'm giving you the mitzvahs. If I wanted to make your life miserable, I would have left you Mitzrayim because they were doing a pretty good job by themselves. I took you out and all the good things I did, but what does that tell you? It means that I have your interests at heart. It means that I want things to be well for you. If that's clear to you, now you can receive the mitzvahs. Because you'll receive them now. You'll embrace them. Because Hashem's program of taryag, Hashem's program of mitzvahs, they're not, quote unquote, mere obligations. Hashem is insisting that this is the way, and who knows better than the infinite creator, this is the way that we will reach our optimum existence. And that's what Hashem wants from us. And therefore, awareness and appreciation of how Hashem has been kind to us historically will allow us to relate to the mitzvahs as an extension, as an expression of that kindness. That's already an altogether different relationship with mitzvahs. Obligations are fulfilled. Opportunities are embraced. When Hashem says these are obligations, but these are the opportunities for you, this is the best way forward for you, then Bnei Yisrael will indeed embrace the mitzvahs. And these are certainly pertinent thoughts as we discuss and ponder our own relationship with the mitzvahs, and this, I believe, is an important perspective on why it is that Hashem opens the Aseret HaDibros and essentially introduces the entire program of Torah and mitzvahs by saying, remember how good I was to you, and these mitzvahs are part of that goodness, and then you'll be able to accept and respond accordingly. We'll leave it over there.